Equipping the saints with sound biblical instruction. This is K-Wave 107.9.
Hello and welcome to Pastor's Perspective, sponsored by Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa. My name is Brian Perez. Great to be back with you today. And we are here live on this Tuesday, the 9th of April, 2024. We would love to chat with you. I don't know your number, so you've got to call in to us. 888-564-6173 is the number from now till 4 p.m. Pacific time. That's 888-564-6173. And answering your questions today, we've got Tony Clark, the pastor of Calvary Chapel Newport News in Virginia. Also, Bobby Conway from Image Church in Charlotte, North Carolina, and the Christianity Still Makes Sense YouTube channel. And here in the studio with me, taking a swig of water, Brian Broderson, the senior pastor of Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa. What's happening, fellas? What's going on? What's new and all that?
Yeah, I heard it's 80 degrees out there.
You heard correctly.
Oh, boy, it is so nice. I just had to break out the shorts today, you know. I haven't been able to wear shorts for a while. Well, I was in Peru a few weeks ago, and I was wearing shorts, but yeah, that's so good. But I heard it was like, somebody told me they were in South Carolina. One of my friends was there last week, and she said it was 90 degrees when she left South Carolina.
Wow. Did
that make its way up toward you guys?
No, it did not. South Carolina, you know, it's south, you know, has the palm trees, and it, yeah, it's a little different there.
Must be. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
So, everybody good?
Everybody survived the eclipse, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Rapture didn't happen. None of that.
No.
Just as we knew it wouldn't.
The eclipse was cool, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was pretty great. I mean, we had like...
didn't get much, though.
We had like, I think, two-thirds of the sun here was blocked. And, you know, so... Mm. I mean, it was cool. Put on those little glasses and look. You don't watch it, but you know, they tell you don't stare at it without those kind of glasses on. It's like if anybody could stare at it, I would give them a medal because I mean, you can't even, you know, you glance at it and you're like, whoa, gosh, that is so bright.
Yeah. 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 You know, it's for us, it looked like a round cookie that someone took a bite out of. That's what it looked like here.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Still kind of cool. Lots of cool videos and photos that people took. And
Yeah. I saw a really amazing photo today, and it was actually the sun setting on the ocean, and the light, you know, so the main part of the sun was blocked by the moon, and the light on the sides was... radiating out, and it just was like, wow, that was amazing. Somebody got that photo.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man. But we're still here.
We are.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's true.
You know, I honestly didn't pay that much attention to the lead up to it, but apparently it was the end of the world, right? And all kinds of things were supposed to happen.
Yeah. You know, this whole thing about Jonah and Nineveh and the track that the eclipse took. I just said, you guys are just nuts. They come up with the nuttiest things, and I just said, all right, whatever. I just said, I'll see y'all tomorrow.
Yeah. <You know? laughs> What gets me about all these guys and everybody is that today, the day after, what are they saying? When none of this came true, are their followers still following them? Are they still?
I don't think they skip a beat. I just think they just quickly move on to the next thing. I remember the whole scare around the, you know, the year 2000.
Yeah,
Y2K. Yeah. Y2K, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, everything, all the computers on, you know, the stroke of midnight, every computer is going to deprogram itself and, you know, the whole world is going to enter into chaos. And I remember one guy who was promoting it big time and, you know, had made these kits, you know, get your Y2K kit and case.
I remember those.
But the crazy thing was, literally, when it didn't happen, like the next day, he's like, well, I predicted it would be a non-event. So, but did you hear about this? And he just moves on to the next thing. And I thought, you predicted it was going to be the end of the world. What do you mean you predicted it was going to be a non-event? But you know, he just, he didn't skip a beat. So,
You know, it reminds me, and Pastor Brian, you remember this. You remember when the little pamphlets, 88 reasons why the rapture will occur in 88. And
I do remember.
It had that little white pamphlet with the red letters. And he was selling them, but they were flying off the, you know, the shelf, so to speak. And once again.
Yeah. You know, the more I think about that kind of thing, and the more I just, you know, read the scriptures myself, I just think, you know, this is not anything God ever intended us to do. He did not intend for us to sit around and try to calculate these things, you know. He said, go into the world, preach the gospel to everyone, make disciples of all the nations, not sit around and try to figure out, you know, the very moment of my return. So, a lot of misguided activity out there. That's so, Bobby, I read a little clip of some amazing kind of divine appointment sort of a thing that you had happen at church this past Sunday.
Sheesh.
Tell us that about that. I love that story.
Yeah, so, you know, you remember the story about Nella that came to church coming out of Islam, and I'm in 1 Corinthians 11, and she ends up getting saved. And
you're speaking on head coverings, and you're wondering, why in the world am I speaking on head coverings? And this Muslim lady shows up.
And this Muslim lady shows up, you know, after 20 years being a polygamous marriage in Saudi Arabia and learning Arabic, and it was the exact message she needed to hear. And she wasn't even mean to show up. She's going to the gym.
Yeah.
She gets saved. So I took a picture with her in Starbucks the other day, and she just wanted to tell me about her reading in John and how much she loves it. And she's asking me questions.
That's great.
Well, it's crazy. So I go to a church on Sunday, and we're kicking off we kicked off a series called Does Christianity Still Make Sense? Where I'm doing, you know, five objections over the next 5 weeks: the truth objection, the secular objection, the pluralist objection, the moral objection, and the church objection to placing your faith in Christ. Well, lo and behold, this guy comes into church with his wife and his brother, and he comes up to me after the service and he says, I was reading your book, Doubting Toward Faith, until 5:40 in the morning on one sitting. I just went and I read the book till 5:40 in the morning. And then I was like, I wanted to learn more about this guy, Bobby Conway. And so he goes and looks more up about me after he finishes the book. And he realizes that we have a church, you know, in the Lake Norman area, exactly where he lives. And so he tells his wife, let's go check out the church. So he didn't know that I pastored a church and I lived in the same town as him. So he comes to church and the service opens up with a video that I did back when Doubting Toward Faith came out, of me sharing about my despair and doubts. And that's why he was up till 5:40 in the morning, because he's suffering from despair and depression in his doubts. And I'm like, what are the chances here? I haven't, you know, wrote a book in 8 years, and on the day I'm kicking a series off called Does Christianity Still Make Sense, he's up till 5:40 in the morning in the same town reading a book that I wrote 8 years ago when it didn't make sense to me. And I'm going to take the next 5 weeks to help make sense of it for people. And so we're having coffee tomorrow.
Isn't that amazing? Cool. Yeah. I love those things, you know, and we've all had them over the years. Yeah. You know, you've had those, you've had those moments, and this is always when it really blows my mind. Like when I'm preaching, and I kind of go off on a, you know, a bit of a tangent, something that I didn't plan. It wasn't in my notes, but it, you know, the Lord just leads you there. It fits. It works. And then, you know, then you finish up, and somebody comes up and says, "Man, you know, God just spoke to me today, and you know that one part?"
it's the one part
that I didn't plan for. You know, that's the very thing that just really, really speaks to people. That, you know, that's just a reminder that God is God's in all of this, you know, he's working. Mm. I love it. Yeah.
Well, that's what so encouraged him, because I said, look, when I was going through my dark night of the soul, it was these kind of moments right here mm-hmm. that I couldn't explain away. And I said, God is reaching out to you right now. I mean, just how amazing is that?
Yeah.
And I think that was such an encouragement to him in his despair that I'm hoping that cloud of doubt just lifted as a result. So pretty cool.
Love it.
Yep. And Bobby's book, Doubting Toward Faith, which he was just talking about, is available at ChristianityStillMakesSense.com. That takes you to the Amazon link where you can purchase the books. And you can also pre-order Bobby's book coming out on the 23rd, I believe. It's called Does Christianity Still Make Sense? You can purchase that at ChristianityStillMakesSense.com through Amazon. Looking forward to that. It's going to be good.
Yeah. Wait, still waiting for my copy to show up in the mail. It gets into the Pony Express.
It's off. I think it said Wednesday. I think you're getting it tomorrow. Okay. I got behind. It was like, I got it off Saturday. It's coming UPS. So,
okay.
Good. Yes.
He'll be waiting at the front door.
Yeah. I'm waiting. I'm holding off all my reading, waiting for that.
Right. Don't start another book until this one arrives. 888-564-6173 is the number to call us today. Until 4 p.m. Pacific time, Brian Broderson, Bobby Conway, and Tony Clark would love to chat with you. We're going to start with Diana, listening in Oceanside, California, on the K-Wave app. Thank you, Diana, for downloading the app and for calling us today on Pastor's Perspective.
Oh, thank you. I just have a question for the pastors. What do they think about occultists nowadays? I mean, do you think that they are able to be saved just like everybody else? With all this demonic stuff going on in our culture, I just would hope that they would be received well and discipled and treated like anybody else instead of being put under scrutiny. And I say this because I come from that. Mm-hmm. I have a family past, and it just kind of feels like they kind of treat you like cherry pickers, you know, like there's cherry pickers, and they're just more adamant about seeing more fruit in a person such as myself or with that past. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is becoming like, you know, kind of a thing where the church doesn't seem like a church anymore. So I guess my question is, are people like myself with that kind of background accepted like anybody else? And I say this because the Magi were from Babylon, and they were included in the story of the birth of Jesus. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of feel like that means that Jesus is not a cherry picker mm-hmm. and that, you know, he loves people from all walks of life as long as they turn to him, mm-hmm. give their lives and surrender to him.
Yeah.
Occultists should also be accepted.
Yeah.
And loved, well, just like everybody else.
Yeah. Diana, we believe you. We believe exactly the way you do. I mean, apparently there are some churches out there where maybe, depending on your background or depending on the type of sin that you might have been engaged in, you know, there probably are some churches that keep people at an arm's distance. But if they're doing that, that's not really the way it works according to the gospel. We mm-hmm. open our arms wide to anybody who comes and genuinely wants to turn to the Lord from their sin. I mean, that's what it's all about. And, we've seen many, many people over the years come out of all kinds of crazy, crazy stuff, even spiritually crazy stuff like occultic things. Mm-hmm. And I know I can say this for Tony and Bobby as well. I mean, you know, we're rejoicing when we see God do things mm-hmm. like that. I'm excited. And yes, we want to see people get discipled. But of course, it starts kind of with an open door. You know, we have a policy here at Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa that anybody can walk through the door. You come in just as you are, and God's going to meet you right where you're at. We're not asking anybody to clean up their act before they come. That's right. The Lord's job.
Right.
You know, he does that for people. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's beautiful. And so I'm just want to encourage you that, you know, if you've experienced that, I'm sorry that you have, but just know that I think there's plenty of churches that mm-hmm. feel exactly the way I do and the way you do about this. So
now, Diana, when you said that they're looking for more fruit, do you mean they're like sitting back saying, well, you got to prove that you're a Christian in order to come to our church? Is that the kind of thing you're hearing?
Well, I feel like my prayers are different in nature because of my background. And I kind of feel like people question why I'm always bringing up scriptures pertaining to that. But that's because I feel like every person comes from a different place and they're going to be focused on like certain things. Like I love to pray that I come against all forces of darkness, you know, with sickness, with strife, with everything. But I think that that is kind of what is tipping people off. I have been set free, and I just kind of feel like I have been called to that type of battle because of where I come from. And I love to do intercessory prayer, you know. I love to come against those types of forces. And I think that's all it is.
Yeah. Tony, what would you add?
Well, you know, the only thing I would add is that, you know, just be a little gracious towards people like that, because we see in Acts chapter 9 when Saul, you know, he ended up becoming the Apostle Paul, got saved. The early church looked at him a certain way, too, especially the church in Damascus, where he was going to arrest Christians and stuff. They doubted that he was a real disciple. So they kept him at arm's length. It wasn't until Barnabas came along and brought him to the original apostles that they slowly started to accept him. And then in Galatians chapter 1, the word got out that Saul was now Paul, so to speak. And they said that, hey, the guy who once tried to destroy the faith is now preaching the very faith he once tried to destroy, and they glorify God in me. So just give people a little grace. You know, people don't like to deal with the supernatural a lot, and that's your background. And so they're kind of watching, kind of hesitating, wondering what's going on. So just be a little gracious towards them. Pray for them that your heart doesn't become hardened towards them, because it's a normal reaction. They did it with the Apostle Paul, and they would do it with those who are in that type of background you came out of. Not that they're trying to cherry pick and all that. No, they just want to make sure that you squared away. You know, they don't want a wolf in sheep's clothing, and that's kind of what they thought the Apostle Paul was, a wolf in sheep's clothing. They thought he was going to do from within the church what he tried to do without outside of the church, which is to try to destroy it. Now that he's claiming to be a Christian, and they rightfully so, they were like a little hesitant of accepting him in, but eventually they did, because over time they saw that he was preaching the gospel. Acts 9 verse 20, it said that immediately he preached Christ to them. And so they saw from the fruit that, hey, okay, God really did change his life.
Bobby Conway, any thoughts from you?
Yeah, good stuff, guys. I think too, one of the things, as Pastor Brian was saying, is, you know, truly know not to make sweeping statements about the church in this, because there are plenty of churches out there that would love to have you in it and hear your story. And, you know, at the same token, what Tony said is true too. I mean, you want to be in a church that's a little bit discerning with you. That's just showing that they're trying to make sure that, you know, and not only that, if you're coming out of like the occult and New Age, it's very likely, I would say, that you could be saying things that are off and not even meaning to or intending to. That was my case as a new believer. I think that's the case of all new believers. You know, you're just excited and you know, I mean, I met my wife and we were bonding over a book called Embraced by the Light that was written by a Mormon, but we couldn't discern the false teaching in it because we hadn't been biblically trained yet.
Sure.
So I think this is a very normal experience. And, you know, but a lot of churches struggle, like even with like a background, like, you know, mine with the drinking and partying. Some churches are going to be, oh man, we got to be watch out. Like, so, or if people have tattoos all over, they're going to, so I on one side, the church needs to be gracious and loving and compassionate and accepting of all. They need to remember that mindset. But on the other side, those that are coming in need to realize there is a sense of trying to guard the truth and remember that. And so I would say as well, Diana, if you're not familiar, I was just interviewed last week by my friend Melissa Doherty. She was saved out of the New Age and the occult. And you can subscribe to her YouTube channel. It's blowing up. And, you know, I had a conversation with her last week, but she would be a great resource for somebody that can help you in this journey. And also Marcia Montenegro was saved out of the occult as well. So those are two Christian apologists that could be very helpful for you as you navigate, you know, your new journey in Christ.
Yes, I just found that video, Bobby, the Melissa Doherty YouTube channel. It's called A Former Skeptic Responds to the Toughest Objections to Christianity. Melissa's last name is spelled Dough, like bread, D-O-U-G-H-E-R-T-Y. So look her up there on YouTube and then watch this interview that she did with Bobby Conway. Diana, thank you for calling us today on Pastor's Perspective. And really quick, I want to take a call that was sent in online because it's right along the same topic. George wrote in, how do atheists explain away the occult and the supernatural things that come with those practices since they do not believe in God or in the supernatural? There's definitely a lot of that dark stuff around the world, and it's not some sort of myth that this stuff is out there. Brian, do you know what atheists say about the occult?
Well, again, in when you say atheist, you've got a very broad category there. So, some would be just so strictly materialist that they would not allow for any kind of spiritual activity. They would just chalk it up to superstition or things like that, I think.
Yeah.
But then you find other atheists who, ironically, although they won't believe in God, they will believe in spirits. And, you know, they will even, you know, consider different forms of spiritism and things like that. So there's no consistency all the way through with that. So I don't know. What do you guys think?
Tony Clark?
Yeah, you know, just like it was said, you know, there is a wide spectrum with atheists, and you know, many of them would believe in, you know, spirits, ghosts, that kind of thing. But they don't believe, when they say don't believe in God, the God of the Bible. And some would even go as far as not believing in anything out there. The great doctor is going to definitely expound on that kind of thing. But, you know, some of them do acknowledge, because the whole, there's videos about the paranormal. And videos of them catching ghosts, and they're chasing after some kind of ghost kind of experience, and, you know, taking pictures of, you know, drawers opening up, lights turning on. So they're fascinated by that kind of thing, but they would not equate it to the devil or anything like that. But they do believe in the paranormal kind of activity.
You know, it looks like Diana's still on the phone. Let me jump back to her really quick. Diana, what would you say to an atheist who says that the occult and supernatural and things like that aren't real?
I would tell them that they are very real. If there is a heaven, there's a hell. And if there's a God, there is Satan. And I would proceed with giving them my testimony of every single supernatural experience that I have ever had, especially demonic. Mm-hmm. And I would point them to Jesus.
Amen. That's what it's all about. George, thank you for sending in your question online. And Diana, thank you for calling us today. Bobby, did you have something you wanted to add? I wasn't sure.
You know, I probably, it's want to just say that if you're out there and you're thinking, my goodness, how would an atheist even believe in something like the supernatural? That just seems weird. I would see perhaps it could be a little bit of, you know, some astrology that some atheists look to and horoscopes and stuff like that. But they're still not believing in, you know, a supernatural being. There have been some that have speculated that, you know, like panspermia, this idea that aliens seeded the earth. So some believe in extraterrestrial aliens, which is interesting. Anything to not admit God, right? So we'll say, so some of the moves that atheists will make to not admit God would be, well, maybe we live in a multiverse and this just happens to be the universe that is so fine-tuned and has the appearance of design, but there's a multiverse out there. And you know what? We just happen to be in the one that, you know, appears design, but it's all just an accident because it's bound to happen with so many different universes out there. So we're in a multiverse. So, but all that does is just raise the question, well, then who created the multiverse? It doesn't solve the problem, right? So people shift from the universe to explain the multiverse as an explanation, but then you still have to explain the multiverse. Other people, you know, to get away from it, as I said, aliens are the ones that, you know, seeded this. Well, then, okay, where did the aliens come from? So you have that issue that needs to be discussed. Others recognize the weakness of atheism to ground morality in an objective sense so that you could get away from, you know, subjective morality. So what they do is they go back to Plato's theory, what is Platonism, and so then they end up with sort of this two-realm theory that there is this Platonic realm, you know, that there are these moral virtues that exist in another abstract realm. And this is the realm of that's non-abstract. It's the concrete realm. So these are just types of moves that atheists, depending upon their flavor, have to figure out how to deal with some of the questions that are posed with them. So how do you deal with objective morality? How do you deal with the supernatural? How do you deal with, you know, the fact that nothing can come from nothing? You know, so they come up with these different theories, but we need to look at that for what it is, that these are also their way of being apologists in their own field to give explanation because they can't make sense of it either.
Pastor Brian?
So I was preaching Sunday on creation, and I was talking about the fine-tuning of the universe, and I was quoting Anthony Flew, you know, who was in the mid-20th century all the way through to the end. He was the world's most notorious atheist, as he would have been known. And yet, when he was exposed to the fine-tuning argument, he changed his mind, and he, after, you know, 70 years or of atheism, he became a believer, at least a theist. And, you know, maybe he did become a Christian. We don't know. But he said it seemed that the universe almost knew that we were coming. And so, you know, everything is so precisely ordered for life as we know it. But this is where I'm going with this. But I said the multiverse, the idea of the multiverse, came in response to the fine-tuning argument. So the fine-tuning argument, we can't really deny that everything is fine-tuned. So we'll just come up with another idea that, well, of course, in an unlimited amount of universes, certainly you're going to have one that's like this, and we just happen to end up in this one. But I was talking about how, like, in the culture today, the multiverse idea is, it's gained a ton of traction through all kinds of different things, memes here and there. You see it in films. You see people referring to the multiverse today like people refer to the universe, like it's a reality, like it's a fact. It's just made up in order to not have to address the obvious that the universe is finely tuned.
Bobby Conway, 15 seconds. Oh, your mic's off. Hold on. Start again. I think we turned your mic off by accident. Did we? No.
Don't worry about it. That was a great, great answer right there.
Okay. Never mind.
Yeah. Time's running out.
Yes, it is. 888-564-6173 is our number. We are going to take a break, and then we'll be back with more of your fantastic questions. 888-564-6173. We're back on Pastor's Perspective. 888-564-6173 is the number to call. 888-564-6173. I'm Brian Perez, and I've got Brian Broderson, Bobby Conway, and Tony Clark here to answer your questions about the Bible, the Christian faith, just about anything that's on your mind. If you're watching us on Facebook or YouTube, thanks for doing so. We've got the number posted right there on the bottom of your screen so that you can call us, 888-564-6173. And really quick, at the end of the first half, Pastor Brian was talking about the message that he taught at Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa this past Sunday. It's now archived, so you can go to the Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa website, cccm.com, look under teaching, and you will find that message from April 7th. It's called Creation and Providence. Again, that's at cccm.com. Okay, let's go back to the phones. Up to Santa Barbara, Teddy, listening on AM 1110 K-Wave. Thank you, Teddy, for calling in today.
Oh, hey, guys.
We coming in loud and clear over there?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. I just meant your radio signal, if it was good there, the AM 1110.
I'm in L.A. right now.
Oh, okay, cool.
Oh, I'm lucky enough to hear this. My question is, I don't know the exact Bible verse, but Job said something in the lines of, there's nothing better than to sit in God's word. And if you guys, hopefully you guys can find that verse and explain the context. Like, I want to know his relationship with God, because I know he didn't have the Bible or did, you know, or the Holy Spirit. So did God talk to him directly, like with Moses?
Great question. Brian, what do you think? There was no Bible yet, so how could Job make such a statement?
No, there was no Bible. And it's interesting with Job because there's no references in Job to any, you know, anything like the law of Moses, no reference to the patriarchs. So, you know, people have actually said about the book of Job that it is perhaps the oldest of the books of the Bible, that it maybe Job was a contemporary of Abraham, and yet we don't really know. Well, God refers to Job as his servant. So if you remember in chapter 1, when Satan, you know, when the sons of God are coming and appearing before the Lord, it says that Satan also appeared before him. And the Lord said, have you considered my servant Job?
Yeah.
And so he's the Lord's servant. As we read about him, he offers sacrifices. He is committed to living a holy life. He talks about how he made a covenant with his eyes not to lust after a woman who wasn't his wife. Yeah. And then he makes this amazing statement at one point where he says, he's talking about the fact that he knows at some point that his body is going to die and decay. He says, but I know that my Redeemer lives, and one day I will see him. Though my flesh be turned to dust, in my flesh I will see God.
See God.
So he knows this. Yeah. And then at the end of Job, of course, from chapter 38 to the end, 42, here God appears to Job and begins to ask him a series of questions and show him things about nature that he didn't really know about. And so just exactly how it was that the relationship between God and Job was, you know, carried on, was there, like we see in Genesis 18, for example, we see that the Lord, Yahweh, he appears to Abraham. Abraham is sitting in his tent in the heat of the day, and three men come, and one of them is the Lord. So sometimes we call that a theophany, an appearance of God in a human form, even though he's not actually human. And so could be that that's the way the Lord and Job connected, but we're never really told.
Tony Clark, what do you think?
Yeah, it's believed that Job, just like Pastor Brian said, it's believed that Job lived during the days of the patriarchs. And so how Abraham had a relationship with God and Isaac and Jacob. Pastor Brian quoted Job 31:1 when he says he made a covenant with his eyes. Job 19:25 when he says, I know my Redeemer liveth. And Job 23:12, that's what you're looking for. He says, I treasure your words of your mouth more than my necessary food. And so I believe at the end, like Pastor Brian mentioned, in the last part of the book of Job, where God sits him down and gives him a 60-point question essay, and said, where were you when all these things took place? And so I believe that's how the Lord spoke to Job. He spoke to Job audibly, just like God spoke to Abraham audibly and told him, take your son, your only son, go on top of Mount Moriah, and that sort of thing. So I believe he had that type of relationship with God, very similar to Abraham and the other patriarchs.
Teddy, what do you think?
Great, thank you.
Good. Well, glad you made it down. Do you live up in Santa Barbara?
Yeah, just a part-time. Half my time there, half my time here.
Okay, cool.
Did you just find us today, Teddy?
No, I called in maybe like two more times before.
Okay.
I'll see you guys whenever I can.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for calling in and listening on either FM 107.9 or AM 1110 or by downloading the K-Wave app. You can even listen on your smart speaker. So many ways to listen nowadays. 888-564-6173 is the number to call. 888-564-6173. And let's go to Monica in Santa Ana, California. Hello, Monica, watching on Facebook.
Yeah. Hi. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Monica.
Hi. Pastor Broderson, I just wanted to first of all tell you thank you for leading me, you know, for my sister and I to go see my cousin Kyle.
Mm-hmm.
We did. I highlighted some stuff and I prepared some stuff. My sister read it to him. We prayed over him.
Oh, good.
But unfortunately, two days after he passed away.
He passed away. Okay.
So, yeah. But I just wanted to tell you how grateful I am.
Yeah. And you know, now you just trust the Lord with it, right? You just, you know, you did what you could do and you leave it in God's hands. So that's good.
Right.
I'm glad to hear that. Sorry that he passed away.
Thank you. Well, we're working on everything right now.
Yeah.
I have two questions.
Okay.
Back to the basics of Malachi. I was listening to, you know, doing my little Bible study.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how you, in Malachi, they were talking about, you know, tithing and stuff.
Right.
You know, stuff, you know, Paul says, if you sow a little, you'll get a little. Mm-hmm. My question is, the first question is, so what if somebody's struggling financially and stuff, and they only had a little to give?
Mm-hmm.
Will they still then receive a little?
Mm-hmm.
And then my second question is on the creation this Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say that, you know, Jesus has the whole world in his hands.
Yeah.
Me and this gal were fellowshipping outside. I just met her. Her name is Michelle. She's really nice. Anyways, I'm all, does that mean it? Does that explain gravity?
Mm-hmm.
She goes, I don't know. I go, that's a good question. I'm going to call it past perspective.
Yes, it does. It explains all of those laws of physics that we know exist, but we don't really know why. You know, we know there's a law of gravity. Newton was the one who kind of, you know, was the first one to have a kind of a clear picture on that, apparently. But still today, nobody knows exactly why gravity works the way it works. It just, this is what it does. But as we read in Scripture, all things are held together by Jesus. So we know why physics works. It's because of the Lord. Yes. Now, back to your first question. So remember the story? Have you read the story where Jesus is with his disciples and they're in the temple and they're watching people come and give their gifts? And there's these very wealthy people and they're coming and they're giving these extravagant gifts and so forth. And then an older woman comes and she puts in the smallest amount, 2 mites, which are like less than a penny. And everybody's watching as she does this. And Jesus turns to his disciples. He says, you see that woman? She actually put in more than anybody else did. And they're like, really? How? And he said, because they gave out of their wealth, but she gave out of her poverty. So it didn't really cost them anything. It's like, we got some money to spare. We'll give it to the Lord, you know, and we'll be fine. We can still do what we want to do. But she was giving up her livelihood. She was giving up everything and she was trusting in the Lord. So Jesus says, she gave the greater amount, really. And so for us, you know, even when we're struggling financially, the tendency is to say, I can't give because I'm struggling financially. Well, we can give something. And when we give something, what we're doing is we're just showing the Lord, Lord, I'm trusting you. Here I am. I'm going to give this, and I'm going to trust that you are real and that your promises are real and that you're going to do what you said you do. You're going to make up the difference. And I love, David said this in the Psalms. He said, I was young and now I'm old. And I've never seen the righteous forsaken or God's children begging for food. And I think, that's true. So God bless us, even if it's a small amount, giving out of your need. That's what God really honors.
Would you say God looks more at percentage then? Because this woman with the 2 mites, that might have been 100% of what she had. I mean,
well, I think in the end, of course, God's looking at the heart.
Yeah.
And he knows that she's giving something that cost her. And, you know, David even said something like that, right? When he wanted to purchase this plot of land so he could set it apart for the temple to be built. He goes to this man, and he says, I want to buy this. And the man says, well, no, you don't need to buy it. You're the king. You just take it and you're going to do something for the Lord. It's my gift. And David said, he said, I will not give to the Lord that which costs me nothing.
That which costs me nothing.
And I think, there's something to that principle there, anyway.
For sure. Yeah. We have another question about tithing. It's from Barnes in California. Go ahead.
Yes, can you hear me? This is Barnes from our Garden Grove.
Go ahead.
Hey, Barnes.
And okay. And before I get into my question, I want to say I listen to you guys all the time, and I highly respect you. So, but I'm just a little bit, Pastor Brian was talking on tithing on last week, and I just happen to be a tither, at my church. I've sat under pastors, theologians, I guess you can call it that, and spoke on tithing, from the Old Testament to the New Testament. And I heard Pastor Brian talking on last week, and I forgot what day it was, and he was talking about tithing. And I just want to make sure I understand, because ever since I heard him speak on that, I've not been confused. But when I start to talk to my sisters and my brothers in Christ, I was kind of like telling them what I heard. And it's the second time I heard that. My brother, who was one of the deacons in his church in another state, he brought that up to me one time. That he says, brother, tithing 10%. He said, now look here. I tithe. I don't want you to think I don't. I tithe. But the Bible does not say that Christians of today have to tithe 10%.
Right. Yes. Yes. And the Malachi passage, of course, talks about bringing your tithe into the storehouse. And so the tithe means the tenth. Yes. And what I said is that that was a requirement for the children of Israel. And but we don't have that requirement or the mandatory thing ever expressed in the New Testament epistles. Tithing is mentioned in the Gospels because, of course, the Gospels are still very much, the context is still very much the Old Covenant until Jesus dies and rises again, and then the Spirit comes down on the day of Pentecost and so forth, and the church begins to go forth. But when you read through the letters of the apostles, they never talk about tithing. They don't require tithing, but they do talk about giving, and they encourage giving, and they give an incentive for giving. They say that, well, God gave us his unspeakable gift, so he becomes the example of one who gives. And so we're to follow that example. But he also tells us that if we fail to give, then that is going to have a negative impact on us when it comes to our ability to receive blessing from the Lord. So Paul says that those who give are to give joyfully, they are to give generously, and that they he then gives an illustration from, you know, agriculture, sowing, planting seeds. He says, if you plant a few seeds, you'll get a small crop. But if you plant a lot of seeds, you'll get a large crop. And so he's exhorting us to sow bountifully, sow lots of seeds. In other words, give. And the context is in 2 Corinthians chapters 8 and 9. Paul is talking there about giving to the ministry so the work of the kingdom can go on. So now this is not everybody agrees with my view on it. But that's the position I'd take. So I encourage people to tithe, to use that as a base. Somebody comes and says, well, I want to start giving to the Lord. Well, okay, well, just start with 10%. Oh, I don't think I can start with 10%. Okay, we'll start with 5% then. You know, there's not this exact percentage that we find in the New Testament anywhere that is required for us. The important thing, and what the New Testament does tell us to do, is to give.
Tony Clark?
Barnes, I'm of the tithing persuasion. Just like you were originally taught, the Bible talks about tithing even way back with Abraham, 400 years before the law was even given. People say, well, tithing is under the law, brother, we're under grace. Well, tithing came 400 years before the law, when Abraham gave Melchizedek a tenth of all that he had. Jacob in Genesis 28 said that, Lord, if you bring me back to this place, I promise to give you a tenth of all that I have. Now, why is it that where did they get this tenth from? Why not a seventh or a 13th or 11th? Why a tenth? Because I believe God told them this is what was required of them. And so we see tithing before the law, we see it after the law, and, you know, of course, in Matthew 23:23, it talks about that whole giving thing. Yes, people have looked at that as, well, we're still under the Old Testament, but if that's the case, then tithing was required under the Old Testament. But one thing Pastor Brian mentioned that was good, if people say, I want to start giving, and he said, well, start with a baseline of 10%. That's wisdom right there. That is some wisdom to start. So for me, just like David said, I've been young, but now I'm old. I've never seen the righteous forsaken, nor his seed begging bread. You know, once you start giving, God opens up the windows of heaven, and you will give way above and beyond 10%. You just give and give and give because God has been so good to you, because he has indeed opened up the windows of heaven to you.
Bobby Conway.
Okay, so I'm probably in the middle here on this view, but
no,
right.
We're gonna write a book: Three Views on Tithing.
Three Views on Tithing. That's right. Yeah. So
my chapter will be called The Right View.
the right view. Oh, yeah.
The correct view.
But I traditionally I've taken and decided where Tony's at. But I'm sympathetic to what Pastor Brian's saying as well. Like I'd rather people start with 5% than not start anywhere because they believe it's got to be 10%. And so I'd rather them be able to just start somewhere. And so that would be an important piece. But I can just say in my own life, I'm thankful I was taught tithing because I think if I was told that I didn't need to tithe, and it's not like I needed to be put under a law or whatever, but I remember the wrestle I went through, right? I wrote my check out for 10 bucks. It was a $300 paycheck. And I was going to, I wanted to tithe, but when it came to the moment, I wrote it for 10 bucks. And then I thought, no, you know what? I need to do this. I scratched it off and I wrote a $30 tithe. And that was my first tithe and it was 10%. And I never looked back. And I think I was thankful because had I been told just kind of go with it, I wouldn't have had a baseline to begin with. I would have just lowered it to whatever kept the budget the biggest for me. And so I look at the New Testament probably from the standpoint of, it, even though it might not have been talked about post-Gospels, I would see the 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 passage is it above and beyond offering that was taken outside of their local community to go and help the Jerusalem saints like a special offering.
Yes.
And they were already involved with regular giving. And the reason that they wouldn't have talked about it, it would be kind of like in the same way you don't hear Jesus say anything about homosexuality in the Gospels. It doesn't mean that he was for homosexuality. It just means it was so ingrained in the system of what they knew that I think that when giving's talked about that it would have been inconceivable to drop beneath the tithe because now they've been given the gospel and now they're going to give above and beyond and they're going to even give out of their poverty and they're going to give extravagant. And so I think it was just so fixed into their culture, that tithe, that I don't think anybody would have thought, okay, well now I don't have to tithe. I just think, but I can understand the point that it's not like taught is a commandment, but I do think
most people are
never going to want to get to a tithe.
Yeah. And that would truly be obvious in a Jewish congregation, but that would not be obvious in a Gentile congregation, which many of the churches in the New Testament are Gentile, predominantly Gentile churches.
That's it received.
So, you know, why doesn't, because they wouldn't have known automatically the 10%. And I think,
that's a good point.
You know, for me too, I think there's been so much abuse of the tithe where people have been, badgered about it and warned if they don't give a tenth and condemned. And I just, you know, again, because I don't see it. I think the epistles,
I feel that,
you know, the epistles could have taken a moment and said, okay, hey, we want to talk to you about it. But you're right about the context of, here's the reality. There is no place in the New Testament where it even teaches giving like we do on a regular basis to the ministry. Except maybe Hebrews. Hebrews talks about, you know, those who rule over you. You know, Paul talks to Timothy about those who preach the word and doctrine, give them double honor. I think in those places he's talking about supplying. The workman is worthy of his wage, those kinds of things. But the passages that we often refer to, like I did in 2 Corinthians, the context isn't Sunday morning giving. The context there is giving to a specific mission that they had committed to that Paul is going to collect on. And he's saying, hey, you know, follow through with your promise is what's happening there. So
Bobby, 30 seconds, then Tony, 30 seconds.
Yeah, sure. I would teach. I think my style is that I teach the way Pastor Brian is in general. I just say, hey, we should want to get to this place, but start somewhere. And that's kind of my approach, but I like the point that you brought out that it might not have been as clear in that way to non-Jews.
Tony.
Yeah, 1 Corinthians 16:1-2, Paul talks about, hey, you know, make sure you have this special offering ready, because he talks about as they get together weekly and do this regular collection.
On the first day of the week.
Yes, the first day of the week, that they're to collect that. And so there'll be no rushing when he gets there, so to speak.
Yeah.
But I believe that 2 Corinthians is talking about the special offering that the churches, Paul was collecting to help the church struggling in Jerusalem because of the famine.
Right.
And I'm so grateful that Bobby tithes. Otherwise, all the income from the book sales that he's going to have in a few weeks, he would just give one $10 bill. That's it. Man.
And I, like Bobby, I started with 10% and never looked back either. And left 10% a long time ago, not to go in the opposite direction.
All right, folks, we're out of time. Guys. Sorry that we couldn't get to it. Look at all these calls left over. We're going to have to expand the program to like 2 hours or 3 hours or I don't know. We'll see. Maybe in the future. God bless you guys. Thanks for listening. I'm Brian Perez, and Pastor's Perspective was sponsored by Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa.
Equipping the saints with sound biblical instruction. This is K-Wave 107.9.